Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, hello. Hello, my favorite people. How are you guys today? This is Nicole Sachs, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. And as many of you have learned, if you are coming back to the podcast with me week after week, chronic pain is not just about pain. It is about anything emotionally or physically that is keeping us stuck, whether it be pains in our body, symptoms, conditions, syndromes, or chronic fatigue, or the symptoms of autoimmune disease, or just that stuck feeling like life should be more free, more peaceful, more beautiful than this. And so we're here. We're here to work on it together. So hello. I am happy to be with you. So let's do a little bit of housekeeping first, because we have a really important topic to get to today, and I don't want to take too much time. The first thing I want to say is I've been getting a lot of new listeners, and I'm welcome. I'm so happy you guys are here. I get a lot of DMs on Instagram and a lot of emails like, where do I start? Where do I start? So I'm just going to give you a little starter pack that if you're new to this work, there are a few things you should do. The first thing you should do is go to my YouTube channel, which is called The Cure for Chronic Pain on YouTube. By the way, everything I'm going to reference here is linked to the resources page of my website, which is thecureforchronicpain.com. But go to my YouTube channel and watch the Healing Yourself series parts 1-4. That will teach you everything you need to know, at least for a starter pack, to get started on my work and to understand why it sets you free. Also, this podcast has many, many, many back episodes. And if you go to the first few episodes, there is an episode called Journal Speak, Your New Best Friend, that can help you understand specifically about journal speak, which is the practice that I teach and the practice that gives you permission to allow your repressed emotions to rise. Given that the basic premise of my work is that your brain and your nervous system see your repressed emotions and your repressed emotional world, your stored trauma, to be a greater predator than your physical condition, than whatever the thing is that's keeping you stuck, that's keeping you sick. And because life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, and our primitive nervous system is very simple, it's black or white, you're either in fight or flight or rest and repair, it will choose your physical pain as a safer space for you to sit and be than the prospect of unearthing this repressed emotional world to connect with that trauma. So just a really important kind of brief overview of why we're here and ways for you to sort of get educated so you can kind of jump back into it with us weekly on the podcast and know what we're doing. Also, if you're listening to the podcast and enjoying it, I just want to put a little plug in for rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You guys, by the way, are doing a fantastic job at this, and I get awesome, awesome rates and reviews, and I really, truly appreciate it. This podcast is a labor of love. It is just something I do to get the message out, and when people rate and review it, that message gets out. That is heard far and wide, and suggested to more people and rated higher on the iTunes. I mean, who the hell understands any of this stuff? Just rating and review, it helps. So if you could just take a moment, I know it's annoying, to go over to iTunes and give it a rating and write a couple lines about what it means to you. They are my favorite things to read. Every week I tune into those iTunes reviews, and my heart is so warmed by the way you guys are appreciating the show. So there's that. And if you want to go deeper into the work, I also get a lot of interest in working with me directly. Although I no longer take private clients, I'm having a virtual retreat in May. I'm having an in-person retreat at the Omega Institute in August. All that information is on the retreats tab and on the resources tab of my website. Join me. especially, the, I mean, not especially, because the virtual retreat is incredible and we get people from all over the world and it really is incredibly intimate and amazing. I just say especially the in-person retreat, I think, because I'm just freaking exhausted from not being in the room with people. And I can't wait to be in the room with you guys at Omega. I am so excited. And any of you guys out there that's been to the Omega Institute in upstate New York knows the entire feeling that comes over my body when I think about being there. It's just next level. So anyway, these are my offerings and I hope to see you in some way, shape, or form. All right, my friends. So that's that. And I want to talk to you about a little bit about my Instagram. So if you're not on Instagram, please jump over and follow me at Nicole Sachs LCSW. The reason that it's so powerful for me right now is because I've really tapped into the things that I feel like you guys need to hear and we need to talk about in order for you to become willing, become open, become connected to yourself in a way that can heal you. Because, you know, my end goal is always healing, healing, healing. I want you to connect with this repressed emotional world. I want you to be able to soften and become, I want to say friends, if you're not ready to say friends, maybe just acquainted with your stored trauma and understand how powerful the healing process is when we can stop running from the things that have made us feel so sad and so stuck, to turn lovingly the way we would to a precious child or pet and say, I'm ready to sit with you. I'm ready to see you. I'm ready to be with you. It is extraordinary the transformation I see in people when they're ready to do that. So that's always my goal. And my Instagram channel has been a place where I can really disseminate a lot of this really helpful information. And so the inspiration for the podcast today came from a post that I posted on Instagram this week, and it was about pre-grieving. I got such a big response to the pre-grieving post because I think a lot of people do this behavior and don't even realize that they're doing it. And so I'll read you the post, and it just says, pre-grieving is when we anticipate the suffering connected to, quote, bad things happening in the future, and in the process, erase the ability to have peace right now. And I'm going to read you the caption because it got so many people talking and it flooded my inbox with DMs, and people were discussing it actually on the post, which I love because it creates community. And I want to start there, and then we're going to expand on it in terms of our discussion today. So the post reads as follows. Your fearful anticipation does not keep you safe. I know this because I have spent about 12 million hours pre-grieving, pre-controlling, pre-planning, and pre-breaking down. It doesn't help. In fact, not only does it not help, it's so rarely even true or necessary. By the time the dreaded event even happens, if it happens at all, the person you are is almost never the person you anticipated you'd be. The people involved don't even act or feel the way you'd feared. The way it turns out doesn't follow the script. And on and on. Or maybe it's all terrible. Fine. But you have to admit that your incessant worrying and pre-planning about how terrible it would be did not make it hurt any less. Either way, that's not the only gut punch of pre-grieving. In my opinion, the very worst part of pre-grieving is the way it steals from the right now. There is no way to enjoy the moment and connect into the beauty in front of you when you are feverishly fantasizing about the worst-case scenario a week, a month, a minute, a year, a second from now. You're gone. You're not here. You're there. And there doesn't even exist except for in your terrified, sweet little mind. Breathe, my love. Pause. We have all been there. We are all there every time we forget that being there is hurting us. This is the human condition. We are hardwired to anticipate distress. To live in presence and peace means to wake up. It means that we become aware of this reflexive process and press the pause on it. We regroup, we remember. You are here, right here. Touch your body. Put a little finger, like poke yourself in the leg. Here, you're right here. If it's not happening right now, it's not happening. I know this is hard, but the hard work is our work. I love you. Keep going. So that's the post. And that post got a lot of conversation sparked because it's a big deal. And I can't imagine there aren't many of you out there just nodding your head, yes, yes, yes. Oh, I have pre-grieved. Oh, I'm doing it right now with my job, with my kid, with my pet, with my parents, with the pandemic, with the vaccine, with. We're all doing it all the time. And so I think that the best way to stop doing something that's hurting us is to move through the stages of awareness. And awareness comes from, first of all, knowing you're doing something in the first place, and then thinking through why you do it, taking out the shame of doing it because you're just human and everybody does this kind of stuff, and then understanding that if we can continue to wake up again and again and again, because we're always going to fall asleep a million times a day, it's totally normal, but if we can continue to wake up again and again and touch back into the present moment and realize that the truth is we are not in danger right here, right now, that's how you transform your life. And that's how you put yourself in the position to be comfortable connecting to this repressed emotional world and allowing it to heal you. Because if the fact that the brain and the nervous system view your repressed trauma and your emotions that you need to feel as a more dangerous predator than your physical pain or condition or symptom, then the only way to get the pain or condition or symptom to go away is to remove the predator. The problem is not the emotion. The problem is the repression of the emotion. So when the emotion is invited to rise, invited even in its darkest, ugliest, most toxic, bubbling, stinky, messy way to rise and to be seen and to be embraced, because all it is a crying little child who is so confused and so alone. When that happens, the pain signals and the different bodily systems that are being affected by this process that is happening in every single one of us, the pain signals stop firing. So when I'm working with someone who has a migraine disorder or back pain or neck pain or knee pain or shoulder pain or a hip problem or a frozen shoulder or fibromyalgia or neuropathy of other kinds or skin problems or pelvic disorders of all kinds, when I'm working, and if I didn't mention what you have, I promise you I've worked with it. I promise you I have seen it all over 20 years in this work with colleagues, with my own body. I've seen it all. When I'm working with this, when I'm working with somebody who's struggling with one of these disorders, I help explain to them that all that needs to happen, and I say it, I don't mean to say it like all that needs to happen, like it's such an easy thing to do, but the only thing that is important is that we adjust to feeling what we need to feel. And once we do that, and once we allow the repressed emotional world to rise, the stored trauma to be seen and heard and honored for what it is, the pain signals stop firing and the person is free. And if you are curious, of course, there are tons and tons of stories along these lines on this podcast. So let's talk about why pre-grieving is so important to discuss. I think the most important thing to discuss about pre-grieving is that when we anticipate what may go wrong in our lives, we create a tremendous amount of anticipatory anxiety. And anxiety, although people give it its own category, and I do honor it as its own category in so much as I have a course specifically designed to help people with anxiety. And the reason I do is because I think anxiety requires, to take it to the next level, it requires some really very specific tools. But having said that, anxiety and pain are also interchangeable. They really are. I mean, I've had people who started coming to my work because they had a migraine disorder, and they did the work and they literally haven't had a migraine in 6 months or a year. And they write to me and they say, but Nicole, I'm having such tremendous anxiety. And I just put my kind of proverbial arms around them and I say, I know, that's how it works. Our brain and our nervous system are terrified that feeling these feelings and being part of this emotional world and connecting with our trauma is going to kill us. Okay. The stakes are high. And it's so sure that we're not okay that it'll give you something else to focus on. And if you'll no longer buy the migraines, well, maybe anxiety will work, which is why I say, just breathe. It's okay. It's normal. It's normal to have headaches and all of a sudden to have a shoulder problem and to say, oh, I see. It's just moving around. I've got it on the run. You know, I'm showing it. I can feel my feelings. You don't have to protect me with physical problems. You don't have to stand in place of my feelings. I can feel rage. I can feel grief. I can feel shame. I can feel it. It's safe. It's okay. I can do this. And when we pre-grieve things, we create a situation in ourselves that is so constantly anxious, it's just hard to overcome the continual amount of feelings that is going to be being dumped into our emotional reservoir. I often say that we have an emotional reservoir inside of us. Picture like a clear science beaker that goes all the way from your belly button to the top of your chest. And it's got rage and sadness and shame and the effects of trauma and all the feelings associated with unresolved childhood memories and your personality. Maybe you're a perfectionist or a people pleaser and you're your own worst critic. So everything's always getting dumped into this reservoir. And when the reservoir reaches maximum density, that's when we're going to get a physical symptom because there's got to be somewhere to feel it. The body keeps the score. Your issues are in your tissues. This is the way our body will express things if it's not given another outlet, which is why I teach journal speak. So the point is that when we have all of this going on and we are pre-grieving things, we are like, it's like taking a ladle and just dumping 50 cups into this reservoir every day because we're looking ahead and we're saying, okay, all right, I have a kid and this kid is going to start a new thing. Like my daughter is in a play in community theater. What's it going to be like? Well, what if she doesn't do well? Well, is there going to be a lot of crying? Well, what if people aren't nice to her? Well, what if she's constantly judging herself? How much crying am I going to have to deal with? Or, you know, whatever. And that's like a nothing one. But trust me, I can go there. And pre-grieving has a lot to do with the unresolved stuff we're carrying from childhood because we start to put on other people the things that we might feel should one of those things happen, which isn't necessarily even true. But the most important part of pre-grieving is knowing that you have control over it. Because without awareness, we're just going to constantly make meaning of things that haven't happened yet. A lot of people write to me about their animals. And I understand this. I have Blue Dog. You guys know how I feel about him. If you're new to the podcast, watch out. You're going to hear about this damn dog all the time. I'm obsessed with him. He is my love. He is my life. And I literally lie with him. And I look into his eyes and I say, I can't live without you. You can never die. And I go to all my places of what it's going to feel like. And I let myself go there for like a minute because I don't think denying your pre-grieving process is helpful. But the key thing is to not get caught there. Because if I'm sitting there and anticipating the day that I will have to no longer have this dog, I am missing the very nature, the very point, the very essence of having the dog. Because he's right here. All delicious bundle of him. He's a stinky mess right now. He needs a grooming so badly and I just love him. But I can't live in the future of what it might be like and how tortured I would be to lose him. It's just not helpful. As I mentioned in the post, first of all, it's not helpful because I don't know how I'll feel. Maybe he'll live such a long and healthy life that I'll just feel like it's so merciful to let him go peacefully and I will be completely at peace with it. Or maybe I'll be totally miserable and a mess. But either way, me pre-grieving it right now is not going to help me in that moment. This can happen with literally anything. And I think we're all caught up in COVID right now. And I think that that is actually a really fertile ground for pre-grieving that it's really important for us to talk about. The world has been locked down for a year now. A year. Right now, I'm recording this in mid-February. COVID was already being discussed in the news in mid-February. Maybe we didn't take it seriously yet. Starting about 3 weeks from now is when the country closed down. My kids stopped going to school. It's been a long time. And that's created complex PTSD for a lot of us. And so it's easy to pre-grieve and be like, well, what if the vaccine doesn't work? Or, oh, I'll tell you one I've been doing lately. University of Michigan is now saying that maybe they're not going to fully open up classes next year. And my daughter has already struggled with such a difficult year, taking her freshman year of classes on Zoom and the social isolation and the shame and the stigma of going out and doing anything. And I just found myself with my heart in my throat, my chest all tight in bed last night, pre-grieving how I might feel in the fall if Michigan doesn't open properly and give those kids that experience, and how I'm going to be angry and how poor Isabella and how she's going to be sad. And oh my goodness, seriously, you know, this isn't your life. So can't you see what a fucking waste of time that is? First of all, between now and then, Michigan may decide that they have an excellent plan and they're going to open everything up. That would be my preference. Second of all, I have no idea how she would handle that. She might be just fine with it. It's me that might not be fine with it, but she might be okay. She seems to be making it through everything else, regardless of all my pre-grieving that I am working on. But, you know, we're all going to do it without even realizing it sometimes. And that's why you have to allow it to happen and then press the pause and then become aware and realize that it's not helping. In fact, it's hurting you. And if I could take that example to the next level, you know, let's say I'm on the phone with her and I'm trying to have a nice conversation with my child. You know, she doesn't live at home anymore, so we can talk on the phone. If the whole time I'm on the phone with her, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, does she know? Did she read the article? Does she know that they might not fully open? And, oh, did we make the wrong choice of schools? And, oh, we were so excited about Michigan and blah, 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 blah. Let's say I'm doing that. Am I really present with my child? Am I really even there? No. This, you guys, is probably the biggest time and energy suck of anything we do. And I think it's really important to note here that life is not a choice between what hurts and what's awesome. Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. And that is a huge relief if you really think about it, because you can stop trying to make the things that do indeed hurt feel like you're a bad person or shameful because you're not like living for it. It might hurt me to stop pre-grieving because I have some subconscious / conscious notion that I'm somehow controlling the situation if I am pre-worrying and pre-planning how I would feel should that thing happen. So it hurts to stop doing it, kind of, right? Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, and it kind of hurts to stop doing that pre-worrying and pre-planning and pre-breaking down because I feel like maybe I'm doing something. Maybe I'm in some form of action when I am doing that kind of thinking. Maybe I think somehow I'm protecting myself or her from whatever might come of it. We all know that is actually not true. If you really stop and think about it, I'm not protecting myself or my daughter from anything. So when I have to pause and choose to stop pre-grieving, it's important for you to understand it's not going to feel comfortable. You're going to feel like you're putting down your weapon when you should be holding it. And what I'm saying is that weapon is not protecting you. I want to be present in my life. And being present in my life is the less painful option of the two. The other option is to be half present in my life, kind of probably feel pretty alone because I'm not going to sit and bitch about it to her constantly. And I'm just going to keep worrying about that and keep pre-planning and keep having that conversation in my head. And come fall, it is most likely going to be completely different than whatever I think. Even if that means that the university doesn't fully open up, that doesn't mean that I'm going to feel exactly what I thought I would feel about it and she would be exactly as injured as I suppose she'd be. And we can do that about anything in our lives. And like I said, COVID is breeding ground for us to look at our lives and say, oh man, what about this thing? What about that thing? What about the fact that my kids have been, you know, stuck home for a year? What's that going to do to their development? I could pre-grieve that. I could worry about Charlotte, who's 13. I could worry, when she's in college, is she going to be as advanced as the other kids? I don't know. I mean, I guess we're all stuck in the same situation. All I'm saying is we all can do this. And I hope that my examples, which I kind of feel like sound even silly as I'm saying them, are helping you understand it's not helping in your life either. It's stealing from your moment, and it's not allowing you to be present with the things that are right now. You know, I'm sure you guys have heard me say this. I'm super, super into the teachings of Ram Dass right now, and his whole movement was be here now. And I know it sounds trite to just say that's everything, that everything is happening right now, but it kind of is, you know? And I think it's easy for us to lose sight of that because we are so often lured into living fueled by fear. And when we're fueled by fear, we have to scan the horizon constantly for what could go wrong, what could happen, and also understand that human beings are hardwired to be fueled by fear. Our nervous system is meant to keep us alive. So our brain and our nervous system function, and their most primary purpose is to keep us alive, survival. Without survival, none of this, you know, more high thinking, more complicated brain processes would help us at all. We need to be alive in order for those things to help us. And so we are literally hardwired to scan our landscape and to pick out what is bad and what could be wrong. And, you know, in the 21st century landscape, that's a lot of things. You know, it's not just the saber-toothed tiger and the long winter. Like, we've got a million and 10 things that could be the things that could go wrong. And until and unless we're really, really vigilant about not falling into the trap of that pre-living out our worst outcomes, we'll do it. We'll do it unconsciously. It will just become the way we operate. And I will tell you, I have spent many years fully asleep, walking around asleep and doing this kind of thing, and it's just not helpful. It creates so much more anxiety and so much more need to repress tons of emotions than it helps. And I kind of feel like the only way it helps is if we are so scared to be shocked and sort of bitch slapped by life, then we feel as if we've prepared ourselves somehow. But I just have to invite you to weigh that against how much it's stealing from you today and to say, listen, when certain bad outcomes happen, there's no way to feel into it previously enough to take away the pain of it. You know, I could sit here and waste every minute with Blue Dog and constantly, you know, obsess about his death. And one day when he goes, I just can't say that it's going to make it that much easier for me. And I also can't say that it would have been worth it. And this is up to you. If you're hearing this and you're like, no, dude, my pre-grieving is just, you know, saving my butt, then that's totally fine. I just feel like it's worth the conversation. It's worth the conversation of how much energy we spend putting toward this effort to protect ourselves. And I put that in quotes, you know, in the same way that I say being in the midst of a chronic condition is being safe in the unsafest way. Because if our brain and our nervous system perceive us to be safer in these chronic conditions than we would be if we were excavating the emotional landscape, then we are quote unquote safe according to our system. But is that the safe we choose? You know, and is pre-grieving the safe we choose? I don't think so. I don't choose that for myself. And there's such a relief in being able to embrace what I'm saying and to catch yourself in these moments of pre-grieving when you're laying in bed and it's, you know, My biggest problem is 2 in the morning. 2 in the morning is not my friend, because regardless of how I say that I should never drink a lot of water or tea before I go to bed, somehow, no matter how little I drink, I have to pee in the middle of the night. Maybe it's because I've had 3 kids. Maybe it's TMS. Maybe it's because I'm 48. I don't know. But I really very rarely get through a whole night where I don't have to go to the bathroom. And I go to the bathroom and I come back in bed and my brain goes, oh, here we are. This is not a time for sleep. We have so much to think about. And I've gotten really much, much better. Insomnia was one of my number one childhood TMS symptoms. I've gotten so much better over the years to just meditate myself to sleep and to do a little, you know, mindful journal speak, meaning just doing it in quietly in my mind, coming to the truth about what might be bothering me. There's a lot of different tools. I do a whole podcast on insomnia, if you would like to listen to it. It's one of those in the archives, but the whole point is that when I'm up at 2 in the morning, there's a lot of possibility for pre-grieving. And what I will see myself do is like almost excitedly search the card catalog for what it is that I could obsess over. And when I can pause and when I can say, hey, Nicole, you're doing that thing you do where you think you're safer if you pre-have that conversation and pre-determine how it will feel and pre-fantasize about what her face is going to look like and, you know, all those things. You think it's keeping you safe. You think it's actually helping you. It's not. It's time for sleep now. No matter, even if it weren't time for sleep, this would not be keeping us safe. Can we just be here? You know, and do one of the exercises that I teach about touching into the moment. Use your 5 senses. What's one thing you can smell? What's one thing you can taste? What's one thing you can see? What's one thing you can hear? What's one thing that you can feel? And you know, just feel your soft sheets. And, you know, if the only taste you have is a bad taste in your mouth because you've been half asleep, it doesn't matter. Touch into the present moment and say, here I am. Here I am. I see the little bit of moonlight coming through the window. Here I am. And I can be here because it's not helping me. In fact, it's hurting me to be there. And it's just a practice. Like anything else is a practice. It's a practice. You just show up for yourself and keep trying. And little by slowly, you will feel a shift. I can stop myself from pre-grieving. Trust me, I still need to stop it. Like 10 times a day, but I can stop it almost every time. And here's another thing that life continues to hand me. Everything that I am tempted to pre-grieve about, if I can just sit with it for long enough and let life be life and let other people have their experiences and their outcomes, and I'm paying attention to the things that I might have wanted to pre-grieve and control in my own mind, there are so many situations where I'm given the opportunity to see, wait, that bad thing didn't even happen. I can't even tell you. I'm so in awe of life that it continues to teach me that the way we need to treat ourselves with kindness, with compassion, with love, with presence is the way. A little example, which is so dumb, and thank God my kids don't listen to this podcast more because I feel like they would just hate me for how much I talk about them. But, you know, I stress over my kids' social predicaments in COVID because I feel like they're so isolated, and they're not that isolated. A couple of them go to hybrid school. A couple of them don't. But it's they're not that isolated. You know, we live in a beach community. They can go walk outside with their friends. But I decide that it's a huge problem and I'm going to stress about it. And I was particularly stressing about my youngest daughter. I felt like she was losing her social connections and whatever. And I didn't let myself continue to pre-grieve. I kept pressing the pause. I kept touching back into the moment, doing something kind for myself, walking away, you know, in my mind from the situation. And last weekend, a situation that I was worried about with, like, you know, one of her friendship situations totally turned around. And she had a great time with this friend. And I was like, Nicole, see? Life is your greatest teacher, showing you that if I could have spent 50 hours on that pre-grieve, I could have done a stellar job on how much I was worrying about that one situation. And I didn't at all because I knew how silly and how it was hurting me, so I didn't do it. And there she went, resolving it herself, which, by the way, as we all know, is the most healthy way for a person to resolve something, not because someone else controlled it or pulled the strings or made it easier, because they just did their own life. especially in parenting. I mean, one day these people are all going to have to do their own life. You can't do their whole life for them. So, you know, that's just one example. But I really think that this is a topic worthy of our attention, worthy of our awareness. And as we continue to sit with our knee-jerk, reflexive thought patterns and challenge them and understand where they come from, like I said, you are hardwired for this, so there's no shame in it, none. Totally remove the shame. But when we know what's happening, we can operate with choice. And being a person who can choose means that you are free. Free to live a life that is your choosing, that you are not being controlled by anything. You're not being controlled by your past trauma. You're not being controlled by your repressed emotions and what they're doing to your body. You get to live your life. So key, so important. All right, my loves. Well, I hope that this conversation sparked something in you. Feel free to come onto Instagram and to be part of that community. Comment. I always do my best to answer as many comments as possible on the public posts. I can't always answer DMs just because I get so many of them. But when they're public, my time is more well spent because it's something that everybody can benefit from. All right, my loves. Well, it's been so wonderful being with you. As I said, if you're enjoying the podcast, please just jump over to iTunes and rate and review it. Tremendously helpful to me and to so many others. And I just send you big love. And I'm telling you, this is the hard work, but the hard work is our work. And you can do this. All right. Until next time, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast. And I will see you then. Bye-bye.